Unearthing Paranormal is part of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network.
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange
journey. I feel that I am merely an agent.
And welcome to another episode of Unearthing Paranormalcy, the podcast that digs into the paranormal and tries to find normalcy in the topic. I'm Amy.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Chad.
And we're doing distance recording again. Not because any of us are sick, but because Chad doesn't have windshield wipers that work.
Yeah, I gotta fix that, and I gotta order a part. So, and it's raining, and I'm not gonna drive in the dark while it's raining. It's scary enough doing it during the day.
Yeah,
I hope
run errands earlier, and it was a little more difficult than I expected it to be.
I hope everybody had a great Halloween, and thank you for attending our live show. If you did, it was a blast,
as always.
And if you missed it, you can always go back and watch it.
On our Facebook.
On our Facebook group.
Well, before we get started in this week's episode, here's a promo from one of our Green Mushroom Podcast Network shows.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Jason. And we're the hosts of Grognostics, the podcast.
Take a journey down the rabbit hole with us as we investigate some of life's most intriguing mysteries while sampling some of the country's finest craft beers.
Some topics would include UFOs.
What the heck was that?
What? Oh, that spaceship? I got some sound effects for our promo. Pretty sweet, huh?
It's a little annoying, actually. Where was I? UFOs. Oh, the disappearance of the Roanoke colony. Seriously, Steve? Foreign accent syndrome, reincarnation, mediums and psychics? Nothing? Well, that's better. Cosmic quandaries, sex in the ancient world. Okay, that's it. I'm done.
You can find the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcast. That's Grognostics, Grognostics.
Those guys are awesome.
They are.
Yeah, I love their sense of humor.
They're a hoot.
I probably already told this story, but I'd actually been listening to their show and stuff, and then they reached. It was the wildest thing because they reached out to us, and Amy's like, "Hey, somebody messaged us from this." I think it was Jason. Jason from, you were like, I forgot how you pronounced it.
Grognostics.
I thought you pronounced it different though.
No.
Oh, okay.
We got introduced
like
to them.
Like Grognostics or something like that.
We got introduced to them through PIOT. Because they interviewed PIOT right after we interviewed PIOT.
Yeah. And then I started listening to their stuff and then they reached out to us.
Yeah.
And I was like, heck yeah.
Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
Meet a lot of interesting people throughout the podcast world.
You really do.
Well, in 2003. This was 20 years ago from where we're recording this. The CIA declassified a document that reports on a technique called the Gateway Experience, a training system developed by the Monroe Institute that was designed to focus brainwave output to alter consciousness and escape the restrictions of time and space. This document was produced by U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Wayne M. McDonnell. And I am told that after he retired, he actually went to go work at the Monroe Institute. And he might be the president of it, according to one podcast I was listening to about it.
According to legend.
Yeah. So I'm going to read this document, and we will comment on it as we go. It has been described as a, quote, vicious mind labyrinth. For 24 pages, it winds its way through the spiritual and scientific underpinnings, techniques to achieve, and potential applications of space-time transcendence, unquote. And then the report suddenly skipped to page 26. When this was declassified in 2003, page 25 was missing. A change.org petition and countless FOIA requests have been submitted by conspiracy theorists, government transparency activists, occultists interested in astral projection or different states of consciousness, and people that just frankly wanted to read it. The CIA has been adamant that they do not have it and never did. Then a person found it buried in the Monroe Institute archives in Faber, Virginia.
How convenient.
The full report, including page 25, was now available. Well, and this just happened a couple years ago. I was shocked when I heard about it. So there are two Vice.com articles linked below in the show notes by Toby Campion that give more details on Robert Monroe and Itzhak Bentov, and more details on how they obtained page 25. Go check them out. They also break down some of this stuff we are about to get into. So now that we have the full report in its entirety, we're going to read it and comment as we go. What I noticed in my first read-through is a lot of the material in Peter Moon and Preston Nichols' first three books about the Montauk Project is contained within this paper. There's details about Earth biorhythms, metaphysical grids at the atomic, molecular, worldly, and universe level, consciousness manipulation, separating consciousness from the physical body, transcending the limitation of time-space, and so much more. There is a link to a copy of this document available on the Vice.com articles, and a link to a PDF of it is in our show notes. There are some charts and diagrams in them which may be hard to explain through an audio medium. I recommend listeners to pause often and give themselves time to absorb and contemplate on some of the themes in this report. I will say quote and unquote as I shift from the document to my own thoughts. And when there are quotes within the report, we'll have Amy or Chad read them. All right. The letterhead on this document is the Department of the Army, U.S. Operational Group, U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command, Fort George G. Meade, Maryland. Dated 9th of June, 1983. Subject, Analysis and Assessment of Gateway Process. To Commander, U.S. Army Operational Group, Fort Meade, Maryland, 20755. Section 1. You tasked me to provide an assessment of the Gateway experience in terms of its mechanics and ultimate practicality. As I set out to fulfill that tasking, it soon became clear that in order to assess the validity and practicality of the process, I needed to do enough supporting research and analysis to fully understand how and why the process works. Frankly, sir, that proved to be an extremely involved and difficult business. Initially, based on conversations with a physician who took the Gateway training with me, I had recourse to the biomedical models developed by Itzhak Bentov to obtain information concerning the physical aspects of the process. Then I found it necessary to delve into various sources for information concerning quantum mechanics in order to be able to describe the nature and functioning of human consciousness. I had to be able to construct a scientifically valid and reasonably lucid model of how consciousness functions under the influence of the brain hemisphere synchronization technique employed by Gateway. Once this was done, the next step involved recourse to theoretical physics in order to explain the character of the time-space dimension and the means by which expanded human consciousness transcends it in achieving Gateway's objectives. Finally, I again found it necessary to use physics to bring the whole phenomena of out-of-body states into the language of physical science to remove the stigma of its occult connotations and put it in the frame of reference suited to objective assessment. All right, section two. I began the narrative by briefly profiling the fundamental biomedical factors affecting such related techniques as hypnosis, biofeedback, and transcendental meditation, so that their objectives and modes of functioning could be compared in the reader's mind with the Gateway experience as the model of its underlying mechanics was developed. Additionally, that introductory material is useful in supporting the conclusions of the paper. I indicate that at times these related techniques may provide useful entry points to accelerate movement into the Gateway experience. Section 3. Niels Bohr, the renowned physicist, once responded to his son's complaints about the obtuse nature of certain concepts in physics by saying,
"You are not thinking. You are merely being logical."
The physics of altered human consciousness deals with some conceptualizations that are not easily grasped or visualized exclusively in the context of ordinary left-brain linear thinking. So to borrow Dr. Bohr's mode of expression, parts of this paper will require not only logic, but a touch of right-brain intuitive insight to achieve a complete, comfortable grasp of the concepts involved. Nevertheless, once that is done, I am confident that their construction and application will stand up to the test of rational critique.
I'm already scared I'm not going to understand any of this.
That's why we're here to comment on it.
We're here to make it sound like we know what Dave's talking about.
Yay.
We for sure will make him sound smarter than us.
All right, section four. Paradoxically, having gone to such great lengths to avoid trying to render judgment based on an occult or dogmatic frame of reference, in the end, I found it necessary to return at least briefly to the question of the impact of the Gateway experience on common belief systems. I did so because although it was essential to avoid attempting to render an assessment in the context of such systems, I felt that it was necessary, after having completed the analysis, to point out that the resulting conclusions do not do any violence to the fundamental mainstream of either Eastern or Western belief systems. Unless that point is clearly established, the danger exists that some people will reject the whole concept of the Gateway experience in the mistaken belief that it contradicts and is therefore alien to all that they hold to be right and true. Section 5. This study is certainly not designed to be the last word on the subject, but I hope that the validity of its basic structure and of the fundamental concepts upon which it is based will make it a useful guide for other USAINSCOM personnel who are required to take the Gateway training or work with Gateway materials. Signed, Wayne M. McDonnell, Lieutenant Colonel M.I., Commander DET-0. All right. So we got the letter out of the way. And I will have to say that out of a lot of the podcasts I've listened to, it, a lot of them have brought on physicists. And they've said that the material in this is like beyond what you would need for like a graduate degree. And it checks out, which I found absolutely fascinating. All right, quote, "The Gateway experience, brain hemisphere synchronization and perspective." Section 1, introduction. In order to describe the Monroe Institute technique for achieving altered states of consciousness, the Gateway experience, involving brain hemisphere synchronization or hemi-sync, The most effective way to begin is to briefly profile the basic mechanics which underlay operation of related methods such as hypnosis, transcendental meditation, and biofeedback. It is easiest to effectively describe what Gateway is by beginning with a short description of those associated techniques that share some common aspects with the Gateway experience, but which are nevertheless different. In this way, we can develop a frame of reference at the outset, which will provide useful concepts to explain and understand Gateway by comparison as we proceed, unquote. All right, quote, Section 2, Hypnosis. According to the theories of psychologist Ronald Stone and the biomedical engineering models of Ishtak Bentov, hypnosis is basically a technique which permits acquisition of direct access to the sensory motor cortex and pleasure centers, and lower cerebral emotional portions and associated pleasure centers of the right side of the human brain following successful disengagement of the stimulus screening function of the left hemisphere of the brain. The left hemisphere of the brain is the self-cognitive, verbal, and linear reasoning component of the mind. It fulfills the functions of screening incoming stimuli by categorizing, assessing, and assigning meaning prior to allowing passage to the right hemisphere of the mind. The right hemisphere, which functions as the non-critical, holistic, non-verbal, and pattern-oriented component of the brain, appears to accept what the left hemisphere passes to it without question. Consequently, if the left hemisphere can be distracted either through boredom or through reduction to a soporific semi-sleep state, external stimuli to include hypnotic suggestions are allowed to pass unchallenged into the right hemisphere, where they are accepted and acted upon directly. The result may involve an emotional reaction originating in the lower cerebral region, sensory motor responses requiring involvement of the cortex, and so on. Both the sensory and the motor cortices of the right cerebral portion of the brain contain a sequence of points known as the homunculus, which correspond to points in the body. See Exhibit 1, next page. Stimulation of the corresponding area on the cortex causes intermediate response in the associated portion of the body. Consequently, induction of the suggestion that the left leg is numb, if it reaches the right hemisphere unchallenged and is referred to the appropriate area of the sensory cortex, will result in an electrical reaction being generated that will induce the feeling of numbness. Similarly, the suggestion that the person is experiencing a general feeling of happiness and well-being would be referred to the appropriate pleasure centers located in the lower cerebral portion or in the cortex of the right hemisphere, thereby inducing the suggested feeling of euphoria. Finally, suggestions such as one that informs the hypnotic subject that he enjoys enhanced concentration or powers of memory would be responded to be in the right hemisphere by accessing unused information storage capacity, normally held in reserve as a result of left hemisphere selection and control processes. This aspect will become significant in the context of the Gateway process when attention is given to examining the way that hypnosis may be used to accelerate progress in the early stages of the Gateway experience, unquote.
I actually grasp this concept. This is just the basic left or right brain theory. And right brain, people are, the right brain is the creative side, the left brain is the logical side.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're able to shut down the logical side and let the creative side do its thing, then, yeah, I can see it making euphoric feelings and experiences and things like that, because you're not having the logic shut it down and it can be rainbows and unicorns and whatever creative basis you need it to be.
And in the places where I haven't heard this described as left brain and right brain would be like the differences between the conscious and like the subconscious, where the subconscious is really only aware of what's going on inside the body, and it has no awareness of what's outside of it. Prior to this, it was thought that we had a body brain located inside the nervous system. Some people thought this was like the solar plexus, or the, I forget the name of the plexus underneath it, but it was called the body brain. You might see that in mystery school teachings, especially from the early 1900s.
Well, yeah, because we have neurons that shoot out from our stomachs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Kapow!
Unfortunately, my neurons in my stomach are larger than the neurons in my brain, and I eat too much food.
Yeah. But this...
That was the saying, your stomach is bigger than your eyes. Yeah. Your eyes are bigger than your stomach.
Yeah.
But this bicameral brain doesn't really work. Like, they found it doesn't really work in that way. Like, it's all right to think of it as, like, left side's logical, right side's creative. But when you actually look at where the brain's functioning, things on your left side might be hitting where scientists who propose this theory would expect it to trigger on the right side. But it's still, I think, easier to differentiate them between left and right than it is like between all these other descriptions.
Yeah.
So while not technically left and right, I mean, we get the idea of the concept.
Yeah.
Some also look at it as like more of a reptilian mind versus the upper brain.
Well, I guess if you think of it as the left and right brain, and the right brain being creativity and the left brain being logic, it also makes sense for like a right brain person like me to find peace and relaxation when it comes to doing arts and crafts and yeah. doing creative things, because it's allowing my brain to rest a little bit and not have to struggle so hard to use that left side.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about flow states during this, and like the hypnotic state and REM, and it's going to be a wild ride.
REM's a good band.
It's a type of sleep cycle.
Oh. Is REM a band?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I said that, then I was thinking of REO Speedwagon. I'm like, no, that's not REM.
And I don't know if you've looked ahead to the next page, Exhibit 1.
I saw the pictures.
I'm just going to let you know, McDonald is not an artist.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what figure A was.
Is brain, I think. Well, there's fallopian tubes, so.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's drawing. There's a face with someone sticking their tongue out on the right side.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's portions of the brain, because right here it says gray matter and white matter, but.
And then there's a foot that's an arm that's a foot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's too hard to try to explain this through an audio medium. I already said it.
Yeah. It's still fun trying to.
And I'm pretty sure this brain has a large intestine. See, there's that brain in the stomach.
Oh, there you go.
Figure B is far more what I'm used to seeing when I think of a brain.
Yeah.
Or figure C even.
All right. Quote. Section 3. Quote. Transcendental meditation. On the other hand, transcendental meditation works in a distinctly different fashion. In this technique, intense and protracted single-minded concentration on the process of drawing energy up the spinal cord ultimately results in what appears to be creation of acoustical standing waves in the cerebral ventricles, which are then conducted to the gray matter in the cerebral cortex on the right side of the brain. As a result, according to Bentov, these waves
stimulate and eventually polarize the cortex in such a way that it will tend to conduct a signal along the homunculus, starting from the toes and on up.
The Bentov biomedical model, as described in a book by Lee Sanella, entitled Kundalini Psychosis or Transcendence, states that the standing acoustical waves are the result of the altered rhythm of heart sounds, which are occasioned by prolonged practice of meditation. and which set up sympathetic vibrations in the walls of the fluid-filled cavities, which comprise the third and lateral ventricles of the brain. In addition, according to Bintov,
the states of the bliss described by those whose kundalini symptoms have completed the full loop along the hemispheres may be explained as a self-stimulation of the pleasure centers in the brain caused by the circulation of a quote-unquote current along the sensory cortex.
Bintov also notes
that most of the described symptoms start on the left side of the body, means that it is mostly a development occurring in the right hemisphere.
Although normally a period of meditation involving intense concentration and practice for 5 years or some is required to, quote, bring up the kundalini, unquote, Bintov states that exposure to mechanical or acoustical vibrations in the range of 4 to 7 hertz, or cycles per second, for protracted periods may achieve the same effect. Bintov cites as an example,
repeated riding in a car whose suspension and seat combination produce that range of vibration, or being exposed for long periods of time to these frequencies caused, for instance, by an air conditioning duct.
He also notes that
the cumulative effect of the vibrations may be able to trigger a spontaneous physio-kundalini sequence in suspected people who have a particular sensitive nervous system.
So, like riding the washing machine on an unbalanced load.
Yeah,
there's a lot of talk about vibrations.
Yeah, there is.
Good vibrations.
And he's going to get in there later how everything in the universe is vibrating at different frequencies.
It's kind of reminded me of like binary beats, too. You put them in, they have different sounds that go into each side of your head. And then they meet together to make one different sound.
Yeah, yeah.
Is what I was visualizing when you were talking about his tones and stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a lot of what the hemi-sync process is.
See, I love listening to binary beats when I'm meditating. It just helps me just kind of zone in to zone out.
Yeah, and he's really just kind of explaining these portions as a way to also get to where this system he's talking about gets to.
So he's breaking it down for us laymen.
He is, at least in this part. Later on, we'll have to break it down for him. All right. Section 4, quote, biofeedback, the third consciousness-altering methodology, which will be briefly described as biofeedback. Biofeedback is somewhat unique in that it actually employs the self-cognitive powers of the left hemisphere to gain access to such areas of the right brain as the lower cerebral, motor and sensory cortices, and assorted pain or pleasure centers. Instead of suppressing the left hemisphere as done in hypnosis, or largely bypassing and ignoring it as it is done in transcendental meditations, biofeedback teaches the left hemisphere first to visualize the desired result and then to recognize the feelings associated with the experience of successful right hemisphere access to the specific lower cerebral cortex, pain or pleasure, or other areas in the manner needed to produce the desired result. Special self-monitoring devices such as the digital thermometer are used to inform the left brain when it succeeds in keying the right hemisphere into accessing the appropriate area. Once this is done, the left brain can then repeatedly instruct the right brain to reestablish the pathways involved so as to produce the same external, objective measures of success. In this way, the pathways are strengthened and emphasized so much in extent that left brain consciousness is enabled to access appropriate areas in the right brain using a conscious demand mode. For example, If the subject wishes to increase the circulation in the left leg in order to speed up healing, he may concentrate with his left brain on achieving that result while carefully monitoring a digital thermometer connected to the left leg. When the concentrated effort begins to achieve success, the digital thermometer will register an increase in the temperature of the left leg. At this point, the subject can mentally associate the sensations experienced with the result achieved and can begin to emphasize, by memory recall, the same process to cause its strengthening by affirmation and repetition. In this way, pain can be blocked, healing can be enhanced, malignant tumors can apparently be suppressed and ultimately destroyed, the body's pleasure center can be stimulated, and a variety of specific psychological results may be achieved. In addition, biofeedback may be used to greatly accelerate achievement of deep meditative states, particularly for beginners who have no experience in meditative techniques and whose progress in that methodology is enhanced through effective visualization and external objective affirmation. Display of the subject's brainwave patterns on a cathode ray tube has proven to be a laboratory validated means by which subjects may quickly learn to place themselves in profoundly relaxed states characterized by the sort of quietude and singularity of mental focus associated with advanced meditation. Unquote. All
right. That's it. Tonight, I'm going to tell my left brain to tell my right rib to fucking heal.
It doesn't hurt. Yeah. Well, I've always heard about, like, you can...
I've meditated through pain. It is
been told pain is like a mindset that you can, that you can almost make disappear.
I have definitely done it. It is not easy to do because usually you get distracted by the pain, but it it can be done. I have definitely done it in my lifetime. Sometimes I forget that I can do that, but
it reminds me a lot of biofeedback would be like breathing techniques coupled with looking at your Apple Watch. And you say, okay, when I breathe in this pattern, my heart rate actually slows down to about this many beats per minute. When I breathe this fast, it speeds up to the... That's kind of what biofeedback is and what I'm thinking.
I totally do that with my watch. That's funny.
Yeah. So that'd be a form of biofeedback. And what that does is, as you're doing these exercises, it's building your confidence because you're physically seeing results.
Yeah.
It's like results-based magic as well. When you start seeing the results, you say, okay, and then you feel more confident in your techniques.
Yeah.
So I guess it would be the same with, just about it. Like even mind over matter stuff.
Yeah.
Like working out at the gym, you know, getting that one more rep in, convincing yourself, I can push it up one more time, you know. And then you do it, and it, you know, it builds up your confidence.
So far, I still understand.
Yep, I haven't been lost yet.
I mean, some of these words make me lost.
But... yeah, I think he just used big words so he sounded smart. Hey, I probably had a thesaurus sitting next to him, and he's like, what's another word for maybe?
For maybe?
Allegedly.
All right, section 5, quote, gateway and hemisync. Now that we have briefly profiled the basic mechanics of the principal techniques for altering or expanding consciousness, which share some of the same objectives and or methods employed in the gateway experience, we may proceed to focus on what that technique actually involves. Fundamentally, the gateway experience is a training system designed to bring enhanced strength, focus, and coherence to the amplitude and frequency of brainwave output between the left and right hemispheres so as to alter consciousness, moving it outside the physical sphere so as to ultimately escape even the restrictions of time and space. The participant then gains access to the various levels of intuitive knowledge which the universe offers. What differentiates the gateway experience from forms of meditation is its use of the hemisync technique, which is defined in a monograph by Monroe Institute trainer Melissa Jagger as
a state of consciousness defined when the EEG patterns of both hemispheres are simultaneously equal in the amplitude and frequency.
Although hemisync seems to be rather rare and of only short duration in ordinary human consciousness, Melissa Jagger states that
audio techniques developed by Bob Monroe can induce and sustain hemisync with the institution's basic focus 3 tapes.
She also notes that
studies conducted by Elmer and Alice Green at the Menninger Foundation have shown that the subject with 20 years of training in Zen meditation could consistently establish hemisync at will, sustaining it for over 15 minutes.
Dr. Stuart Trimlow, a psychiatrist and a research associate of the Monroe Institute, reports that
in our studies of the effect of the Monroe tape system on brainwaves, we have found that the tapes encourage the focusing of brain energy. It can be measured as with a light bulb in watts into a narrower and narrower frequency band. This focusing of energy is not like the yoga concept of one-pointedness, which we may translate into Western terms as single-mindedness.
Dr. Trimlow goes on to observe that as the individual gets into the tapes beyond focus 3,
there is a gradual increase in brainwave size, which is measured by the brain energy or power.
Unquote.
We have the power.
We have the power.
Knowledge is power. Mama always said.
Section 6, quote, lamp versus laser. Melissa Jagger used a metaphor to help clarify the process involved in the use of hemisync in the gateway experience. She points out that the human mind in its natural state may be likened to an ordinary lamp, which expends energy in the focus of both heat and light, but in a chaotic, incoherent way, which diffuses its energy over a wide area of rather limited depth. On the other hand, the human mind, under the discipline of hemisync arts, after the fashion of a laser beam, which produces a disciplined stream of light. The stream of energy is projected with total coherence of both frequency and amplitude, such that the surface area of a laser beam contains billions of times the concentrated energy found in a similar surface area on the sun. Gateway assumes that once the frequency and amplitude of the human brain are rendered coherent, it is possible to begin accelerating both so that the human mind is soon resonating at even higher vibrational levels. The mind can then bring itself into synchronization with more sophisticated and rarefied energy levels in the universe. The mind, when operating at these increasingly rarefied levels, is assumed to be capable of processing the information thus received through the same fundamental matrix by which it makes sense of ordinary physical sensory input to achieve meaning in a cognitive context. Such meaning is usually perceived visually in the form of symbols, but may also be perceived as astonishing flashes of holistic intuition, or even in the form of scenarios involving both visual and oral perception. The mechanics by which the mind exercises the consciousness function will be increased in more detail later in this chapter. Unquote.
So basically that's just saying that once you've learned how to harness these energies of the hemisync, then you can focus the energy on individual tasks, which create more substance?
Yeah, pretty much. But it's also saying that through transcendental meditation, through kundalini experience, and through hypnosis and biofeedback techniques, you can also get there. The hemi sinks are just a way to get there in a more receptive way.
All right.
It's as simple as listening to, like, guided meditations.
Okay, yeah.
And it also talks about expanding the, I'll call them internal senses.
Okay.
Which I guess psychics would call, like, clairvoyance, clairaudience, things like that. You know, there's a lot to be said about this astonishing flashes of holistic intuition, you know? Because, like, you meditate.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you'll meditate, and then all of a sudden, you'll just be like, I have that answer. Or, like, if you fall asleep thinking about, like, a problem you're having, maybe you wake up and you go, oh, well, that's how I'll fix that. That was easy.
I've noticed I've been meditating a lot more frequently here lately because I'm trying to work through pain and all that. And I'm noticing that my intuition is more on point than it's been in a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like even when not in meditation sense, but just in like everyday existence since I've been meditating almost nightly. Then my intuition is a lot more on point and a louder, so I'm paying attention.
Yeah, yeah. I also found it funny in here on the where it said higher vibrational levels. I mean, that sounds a lot like stoner talk and stuff, you know. Yeah. It's like, take acid, man, and raise your vibrational levels.
Good vibration.
But there's a lot about resonating and vibration and stuff that we'll get into later and stuff. Like they'll talk about resonating with the vibrations of the earth and the earth grid and things. Very cool stuff.
Yeah. We're at 51 minutes, but once edited down, it's probably closer to like 30.
Oh, I don't know if it's going to drop that much.
I think it will because there was a long, there was a pretty big period in the beginning that was like 16 minutes on its own.
Oh.
All right. Section 7, quote, frequency following response. To achieve synchronization of brain hemispheres, the hemisync techniques takes advantage of a phenomena known as frequency following response. Which means that if a subject hears a sound produced at a frequency which emulates one of those associated with the operation of the human brain, the brain will try to mimic the same frequency pattern by adjusting its brainwave output. Therefore, if the subject is in a fully awake state but hears sound frequencies which approximates brainwave output at the theta level, the subject's brain will endeavor to alter its brainwave pattern for the normal beta to theta level. Since the theta level is associated with sleep, the subject concerned may progress from a fully awake to a sleep state, provided that he does not consciously resist. As the brain strives to entrain its wave frequency output with the one which the person hears. Since these brainwave frequencies are outside the spectrum of sound which can be heard in pure form by the human ear, hemisync must produce them based on another phenomena known as the brain's capacity for deducing beat frequencies. If the human brain is exposed to one frequency in the left ear, which is 10 hertz below another audible frequency paid in the right ear, rather than hearing either of the two audible frequencies, the brain chooses to hear the difference between them, the beat frequency.
Yeah, that's that binaural beats stuff right there.
Unquote. Yes, it is. That's exactly what they're talking about there. And I mean, there's a lot to be said about that. Like, I know when you fall asleep, it's like you're theta waves go out over to me and I start getting sleepy. Same as like when you're holding a baby that's sleeping, you'll start dozing off yourself.
Oh, yeah. There's something in my office then, because you get into my office and I just...
There's something in the shop. I can be so tired at work, but as soon as I get home, I'm more awake.
And there's things that put out all kinds of vibrations like this. I mean everything puts out vibration, but like the whirring of like a computer fan,
yeah,
can cause something like this. They were saying earlier, like the suspension in a vehicle.
Oh yeah, think of like how many people.
I gotta say, riding in a car puts me to sleep. Yeah, so I can't drive long distances because I'll fall asleep.
Or like, you know, when you have a baby, you put the baby in the car and you just drive the baby in circles.
Yeah.
Because the vibrations of the car puts the baby to sleep.
That's right.
Or like in our case, it was the rocking chair.
Yeah.
I just picked the kids up and put them in the rocking chair, and just the vibration of me singing and rocking them would put them to sleep. And it was didn't matter what I was singing. I just was the volume at which I was singing it and the tone. So I would just make up shit.
You know, baby got back, y'all.
Yeah. Baby got back. My anaconda
right,
don't want.
Collaborate and listen. Ice is back with my brand new invention.
All right, back to section 7, quote, thus availing itself of the FFR phenomena. And using the technique of beat frequencies, the gateway system uses hemi-sync and other audio techniques employing the FFR phenomena to introduce a variety of frequencies which are played at a virtually subliminal, marginally audible level. The objective is to relax the left hemisphere of the brain, place the physical body in a virtual sleep state, and bring the left and right hemispheres into coherence under conditions designed to promote the production of ever higher amplitude and frequency of brain output. Audible and perhaps subliminal suggestions by Bob Monroe accompany the various brainwave frequencies, which are sometimes rolled in together with other sounds such as sea surf to mask the sound frequencies where desirable. In this way, Gateway endeavors to provide the subject with the tools by which he may alter his consciousness based on his own volition over time through the repetitive use of the tapes, so as to access, via intuitive means, new categories of information not available to ordinary consciousness. Unquote.
That also reminded me of, we have an aunt and uncle who are both hypnotherapists. And our uncle had sent me a bunch of CDs to listen to. And so I would listen to them every night as the for the hypnosis and all that. And then we were at a family reunion and we were sitting outside at a table and he was telling the story. But I had been so used to using his voice to fall asleep at night that as he's sitting there talking to me, I'm like, whoa, and I'm just like zoning out.
Yeah, that's like, to put it in perspective, this paper, that's like you're strengthening your whatever hemisphere to access the right one.
Yeah.
So it just automatically started happening to you.
Yeah, as he's just sitting there talking, telling the story about, I don't even know what the story was about. I just know that I started getting really tired and I was like, why am I all of a sudden tired? And I'm like, oh, wait. Uncle Ed is talking to me. I use Uncle Ed's voice to fall asleep.
Because, yeah, how he started this out with, I mean, hypnosis is a valid form to get into this. Because there's one thing kind of everybody agrees on is that we really don't know where consciousness is.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, like, we don't know if the brain produces it or if consciousness produces the brain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is consciousness the soul, or is it just the electrical impulses of the brain?
Right, right.
You know, what is consciousness?
Or is it what causes the brain to have electrical impulses, yeah. You know?
Which came first, the brain or the soul or the brain?
Yeah.
Or the chicken or the egg?
And now we're on to section 8. Quote, role of resonance. However, brain coherence through entrainment to beat frequencies introduced via stereo headphones is only part of the reason why the gateway system works. It is also designed to achieve the physical quietude characteristics of deep transcendental meditation states, which brings about a complete alteration of the fundamental resonance patterns associated with the sound frequencies produced by the human body. Yoga, Zen, or transcendental meditation, if practiced long enough, will produce a change in the sound frequency with which the human heart resonates through the entire body. According to Bentov, this change in resonance results from elimination of what the medical profession calls, quote, the bifurcation echo, unquote, so that the sound of the heartbeat can move synchronously up and down the circulatory system in harmonious resonance approximately 7 times a second. Bentov describes the role played by the bifurcation echoes as follows.
When the left ventricle of the heart ejects blood, the aorta, being elastic, balloons out just beyond the valve and causes the pressure pulse to travel down along the aorta. When the pressure pulse reaches the bifurcation in the lower abdomen, which is where the aorta forks in two to go to the legs, part of the pressure pulse rebounds and starts traveling up the aorta. If in the meantime the heart ejects more blood and the new pressure pulse is traveling down, these two pressure points will eventually collide somewhere along the aorta and produce an interference pattern.
By placing the body in a sleep-like state, the gateway tapes achieve the same goal as meditation in that it places the body in such a profoundly relaxed state that the bifurcation echo slowly fades away as the heart lessens the force and frequency which with it pushes blood into the aorta. The result is a regular rhythmic sine wave pattern of sound which echoes throughout the body and rises up into the head in sustained resonance. The amplitude of this sine wave pattern, when measured with a sensitive seismograph-type instrument, is about 3 times the average of the sound volume produced by the heart when it is operating normally. Unquote.
So would that be kind of like when you feel like you can hear your heartbeat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In your head?
Yep.
I'm still following along.
Yeah, and then the other would be kind of like a little heart arrhythmia there for a second. Or like a little bit of a murmur for a second.
Yeah, when I meditate, that's usually when I know I'm kind of in the right state, is when I start feeling my heart like beating through my whole body, is how I describe it.
I have high blood pressure, so that's actually a common occurrence for me.
That's pretty freaking normal.
And I have extremely low blood pressure. Yeah. Like my readings are usually like 60 over 40, 60 over 30. It's like extremely low.
Yeah, and I've got high blood pressure. I can feel my pulse without actually having to touch my wrist. Sometimes. Depends.
I say if I'm sick or I'm anxious.
If I'm sick, it's really bad.
Yeah, I can't. Like, it's hard even for me to even sleep because I can just feel the pulsation through my whole body.
Yeah.
And if you're familiar with like Qigong and stuff, moving energy up and down the body, most systems they teach, when you get down to the lower energy center, which is at the abdomen, you split the, I guess, energy flow into two parts to go down your legs. And I never realized that was because the aorta travels that whole distance down, like the femoral arteries, something like that. So that makes sense why they do that, because the people that developed Qigong was the Chinese, and they had a very extensive grasp of like the nervous system and the circulatory system. I mean, this is where acupuncture was invented, after all.
Speaking of, I was up in the city the other day going to my pain management doctor, but on the way up there, I saw a place that does Qigong.
Oh yeah,
and acupuncture and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to have to check them out.
Yeah, I do a system similar to Qigong. Because Qigong is really just like reestablishing the flow of life force.
That's one where they were like whacking them on the legs, right?
That's one method of it.
Yeah.
The method I does is more like in the Reiki sense where it doesn't require you to touch the practitioner or touch
the patient.
The participant.
Yeah.
It's a lot of these other techniques like using the brain to focus on areas of the body to pull away like pulled away energy where like it's tight and tense, where it's thought the life force has like bundled. I don't know. It's fascinating stuff, really.
Yeah.
It just is about getting it to flow rather than it being stagnant. And then with these interference patterns, I think what they're talking about here is like when one wave is going one way, right? And it returns back. It's kind of like if you've ever been on a lake and a boat goes by, there's the wake from the boat. And then when it hits the shore sends a wave back. And then it's hard to differentiate which one was from the shore, which one was from the bounce back, and which one was from the original boat. It's like you lose like what is the cause and what is the effect of it until it levels itself out.
Yeah, because each time it loses a little bit of the strength.
Yeah. But I guess if it were to come out and send one back at the exact same rate, it really wouldn't level out, would it? Or it wouldn't level out as quickly.
I don't know.
Because it's not fighting against itself. Yeah, waves are cool. Sound waves, things like that. We'll get more into it. Section 9, quote, brain stimulation. Bentov's biomedical model shows that this resonance is of considerable importance since it is directly transmitted to and impacts upon the brain. The resulting vibration is received and transmitted into the brain itself via the fluid-filled third and left ventricles located around the brain stem. An electromagnetic pulse is then generated which stimulates the brain to raise the amplitude and frequency of brainwave output. Just as Dr. Trimlow observed in his research on the effects of the hemisync tapes, also the brain is contained in a tight membrane called the dura, which is, in turn, cushioned by a thin layer of fluid located between it and the skull. As the coherent resonance produced by the heart rate in a state of profound relaxation reaches the fluid layer surrounding the brain, it sets up a rhythmic pattern in which the brain moves up and down approximately 0.005 to 0.010 millimeters in a continuous pattern. The self-reinforcing character of resonant behavior accounts for the body's ability to discern this movement, despite the minimal level of energy involved. In this way, the entire body, based on its own micro-motion, functions as a tuned vibrational system, which transfers energy in a range of between 6.8 and 7.8 hertz into the Earth's ionospheric cavity, which itself resonates at about 7 to 7.5 hertz. Of this process, Bentov states,
"This is occurring at a very long wavelength of about 40,000 kilometers, or just about the perimeter of the planet. In other words, the signal from the movement of our bodies will travel around the world in about the 1/7th of a second through the electrostatic field in which we are embedded. Such a long wavelength knows no obstacle, and its strength does not attenuate much over the longer distances. Naturally, it'll go through just about anything, metal, concrete, water, and the fields making up our bodies. It is the ideal medium for conveying a telepathic signal."
Is this talking about the Schumann resonance and that vibration?
I think so.
Currently, it is at 7.83.
Ah, 7.83. It fluctuates. This is the, in, I guess the type of druidry, well, in the type of druidry I practice, we call this the heart of the earth. Yeah. In the Montauk Project, you remember they were talking about this, how when people got away from the earth's biorhythms, they got out of sync.
Mm-hmm.
And it would result in, like, madness. It would result in, like, heart attacks and strokes and all kinds of wild stuff.
Yeah.
All right, back to section 9. Quote, consequently, the gateway process is designed to rather rapidly induce a state of profound calm within the nervous system and a significantly lower blood pressure, to cause the circulatory system, skeleton, and all other physical organ systems to begin vibrating coherently at approximately 7 to 7.5 cycles per second. The resulting resonance sets up a regular, repetitive sound wave, which propagates in consonance with the electrostatic field of the earth, unquote.
Interesting enough, that is another thing that I can control, is I can control my blood pressure and make it drop.
Yeah.
By doing meditation and things like that. I've had to do that a few times just so the doctor will let me leave the office.
Right.
and not send me to the ER. I'm like, no, it's because I got white coat syndrome and I'm sick. My blood pressure is going to be abnormally high.
You're like, hold on, just give me a second.
But now that the Earth resonance, it's called a Schumann resonance. And it does a lot of weird things here lately.
I say, wasn't it really high?
It was really high a few months ago, and it's gone to where there's just absolutely nothing. And it just silent for days and weeks at a time, and then it'll shoot up there again. And I say, yeah, there was a period where it was up to 11 hertz, which can cause...
I remember us talking about it in an episode a while back about how the vibration of the earth was off.
It can cause a transformation of the mind, body, and psyche. This also means that the earth can communicate with us with its pulse.
It can.
The earth's been trying to kill us off.
It's trying to wake us up. It's like, yo, stupid people.
You're killing me. You're killing me, Smalls.
Over the past couple years, it was about 2 years ago, we went through the seven spheres, which is about getting in resonance with the hermetic shard of creation within yourself to resonate with these seven spheres of the ancient world, which were the seven planets, essentially. You remember doing this?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I was thinking of when I was listening to this and, like, the resonance of planets and things. I guess... kind of the way that was described is you're kind of tuning yourself into it.
Yeah.
You got to kind of tune yourself into these things to where you feel them. It's like if you were in like a music shop and you played a string on an instrument, like say the G string, all the other G strings in the shop, if they're tuned correctly, will also vibrate and resonate. If they're tuned down to like a G or they're tuned up to like a G sharp or an A, they necessarily won't.
Well, when we did that planetary thing, I apparently synced up with Mars really well to the point that I can still feel when Mars is acting weird because I can still feel it. I can tell when Mars is in retrograde. I can tell when like there's something going on in Mars that I synced up to that one really well. I think that's the only one, but I mean,
you had a big experience with Jupiter.
Yeah.
But I've been meaning to ask if that kind of stuck or not.
No.
Well, Mars is also a one that's much more easier to tune
to. Closer to.
Because it's also thought that Mars is like what gives us like our drive and our passion and stuff. Like a lot of these things that give in to our human experience.
Well, I used to be able to tell you that when Mercury was in retrograde, but now I can also tell you when Mars is.
Yeah.
Simply just by the way things are, what the way I feel.
Section 10, quote, energy entrainment. As the body is turned into a coherent oscillator, vibrating in harmony with the surrounding electrostatic medium, the specific exercises included in the gateway tapes enjoin the participant to build up the energy field surrounding his body, presumably by using energy from the Earth's field, which the body is now in training because of its ability to resonate with it. This puts the body's energy field into homogeneity with its surrounding environment and promotes movement of the seed of consciousness into the surrounding environment, partly in response to the fact that the two electromagnetic mediums are now a single energy continuum. Thus, the same process which moves the brain into focused coherence at steadily higher levels of frequency and amplitude, so as to entrain analogous frequencies in the universe for data collection, also promotes enhancement of bodily energy levels to a point adequate to permit the subject to experience an out-of-body movement when he is ready to do so. More will be said about this topic later. In addition, by resonating with the Earth's electromagnetic sphere, the human body creates a surprisingly powerful carrier wave to assist the mind in communication activity with other human minds similarly tuned. Unquote. Now that's about tapping into like the Earth grid. What was that Peter Moon called it? The morphogenetic grid? He had a different name for it. Or as they call it, electrostatic field. I mean, it exists, the electromagnetic field. That's what keeps a lot of the solar rays off of us and stuff. And the solar flares. Now it was, earlier you were saying you were listening to hypnosis tapes. That's kind of how Robert Monroe got into this. He was doing like some hypnosis stuff. And he was doing some stuff with frequencies that were 10 apart, and he just so happened to have an out-of-body experience doing it.
Yeah.
And he was like, whoa.
What was that?
I need to fuck around and find out more about this. And that's how he went on to develop this system, was just from playing around with it, you know? Section 11, quote, consciousness and energy. Before our explanation can proceed any further, it is essential to define the mechanism by which the human mind exercises the function known as consciousness, and to describe the way in which that consciousness operates to deduce meaning from the stimuli which it receives. To do this, we will first consider the fundamental character of the material world, in which we have our physical existence, in order to accurately perceive the raw stuff with which our consciousness must work. The first point which needs to be made is that the two terms, matter and energy, tend to be misleading, if taken to indicate two distinctly different states of existence in the physical world that we know it. Indeed, if the term matter is taken to mean solid substances as opposed to energy, which is understood to mean a force of some sort, then the use of the former is entirely misleading. Science now knows that both the electrons, which spin in the energy field located around the nucleus of the atom, and the nucleus itself are made up of nothing more than oscillating energy grids. Solid matter, in the strict construction of the term, simply does not exist. Rather, atomic structure is composed of oscillating energy grids surrounded by other oscillating energy grids which orbit at extraordinarily high speeds. In his book, Stalking the Wild Pendulum, Ishtar Bentov gives the following figures. The energy grid, which composes the nucleus of the atom, vibrates at approximately 10 to the 22nd power hertz, which means 10 followed by 22 zeros. At 70 degrees Fahrenheit, an atom oscillates at the rate of 10 to the 15th hertz. An entire molecule composed of a number of atoms bound together in a single energy field vibrates at the range of 10 to the 9th hertz. A live human cell vibrates at approximately 10 cubed hertz. The point to be made is that the entire human being, brain, consciousness, and all is, like the universe which surrounds him, nothing more or less than an extraordinarily complex system of energy fields. The so-called states of matter are actually variances in the state of energy. And human consciousness is a function of the interaction of energy in two opposite states, motion versus rest, in a manner described in the following paragraph. Unquote.
So if I slowed down all my atoms in the energy fields, I could walk through a wall?
That's how it works in the comic books.
Yeah. Because the only thing holding it together is the oscillations.
Yeah, so if I were to slow down...
You gotta vibrate at a faster frequency than what the wall's vibrating at.
Yeah.
That's how the Flash goes through walls.
All right. I've got new goals in life.
You know, in 1983 and in 2003, this kind of stuff blew people's minds. But nowadays, we know, like, about the Higgs boson and stuff. We understand that everything is just stuff moving very fast that gives the illusion of solids.
Say we're constantly bumping into things. Our atoms are.
Yeah. What I find most fascinating is the amount of space. Like, if the nucleus of an atom was the size of a pea, the atom itself would be the size of a football stadium. And that has the electron and all the other stuff rotating around it, right? I read somewhere that if you took out all the space in, I think it was either a human being or in all of humanity, I forget which, it would be about the size of a sugar cube. That's how much space is just between things. And we'll get into it later, but it's real as above, so below stuff. Like when you look at stuff on the atomic level, like I was saying, that from the nucleus of the atom to like the edge of the atom is comparable to like our Earth sitting inside of our solar system and how far apart the planets are.
Yeah.
You know? Real as above, so below stuff, you know? This next part is section 12. Quote, holograms. Energy creates, stores, and retrieves meaning in the universe by projecting or expanding at certain frequencies in a three-dimensional model that creates a living pattern called a hologram. The concept of the hologram can be most easily understood by using an example cited by Bentov, in which he asks the reader to visualize a bowl full of water into which three pebbles are dropped. As the ripples created by the simultaneous entry of the three pebbles radiate outwards towards the rim of the bowl. Bentov further asks the readers to visualize that the surface of the water is suddenly flash frozen, so that the ripple pattern is preserved instantly. The ice is removed, leaving the three pebbles still laying at the bottom of the bowl. Then the ice is exposed to a powerful, coherent source of light, such as a laser. The result will be a three-dimensional model, or representation of the position of the three pebbles suspended in midair. Holograms are capable of encoding so much detail that, for example, it is possible to take a holographic projection of a glass of swamp water and view it under magnification to see small organisms not visible to the naked eye when the glass of water itself is examined. The whole concept of holography, despite its scientific implications, has only been known to physicists since the underlying mathematical principles were worked out by Dennis Gaber in 1947. He later won a Nobel Prize for his work. Laboratory demonstration of Gaber's work only occurred years later following the invention of the laser. As biologist Lyle Watson explains,
the purest kind of light available to us is the produced by a laser, which sends out a beam in which all of the waves are of one frequency, like those made of an ideal pebble in a perfect pond. Those two laser beams touch, they produce the interference pattern of light and the dark ripples that can be recorded on a photographic plate. And if one of the beams, instead of coming directly from the laser, is reflected first off an object such as a human face, the resulting pattern would be very complex indeed. But it can still be recorded, the record of the hologram of the face.
Unquote.
When I think of holograms, I think of Star Wars.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, the little images.
Activate Order 66.
Yeah.
So basic, I guess the definition of a hologram is a 2D image projected into a 3D space, is what they mean by hologram. Now, I couldn't make a lot of sense of this three pebbles thing. And that's why I like to think of it more as, especially going forward, because it's all going to build off this hologram stuff. I guess instead of visualizing it like three bowls and three pebbles and stuff, I guess instead think of like just a triangle on a piece of paper. And then from those three points, extend it upward to one single point. So you have a three-sided pyramid. That would be a hologram. All right. Section 13, quote, the part encodes the whole. Of further importance is the fact that even if we dropped our frozen hologram of the ripple pattern on the floor and broke it into a number of pieces, each individual piece would recreate the entire holographic image all by itself. The smaller the piece, the fuzzier and more distorted would be the resulting holographic projection. But the fact remains that a whole projection would nonetheless be made. The key to creating any hologram is that energy and motion must interact with energy in a state of rest. In the foregoing example, the pebbles represent energy and motion, while the water, before its agitation by the pebbles, represents energy at a state of rest. To activate, or in effect to perceive the meaning of a holograph, energy in this case, a coherent light source such as a laser beam, must be passed through the interference pattern generated by interaction between the moving energy and the energy at rest. In the simple example given by Bentov, this requirement was fulfilled by holding the frozen interference pattern in front of the coherent light to project the three-dimensional holographic image into space. As Marilyn Ferguson, editor of the Brain Mind Bulletin, tells us,
another feature of the hologram is its efficiency. Billions of bits of information can be stored in a tiny space. The pattern of the holographic photograph is stored everywhere on the plate.
Unquote.
Okay, not gonna lie, that part kind of lost me.
I actually think it kind of makes more sense to me now. But I don't know how to describe it, other than it's kind of like their whole process of freezing the water and all that stuff was just to make a...
like a film?
Yeah, that you then pass the light through like a projector that would project it out. Okay. but it projects it out in the three-dimensional shape versus just the 2D shape. If that makes sense.
And then it also says in there that all parts contain the whole.
Yeah. Which that lost me a little bit, but I kind of understood the concept of what it was trying to get out there.
But I think if we take that to something we do understand very good is DNA.
Yeah.
Where even a single skin cell from us has the DNA of our entire system.
Yeah.
So you look at one skin cell, it can tell you what the eye color is, what the hair color is. You know, it can tell you so much stuff when it doesn't even come from the piece that it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
This is real, like, hermetic kind of stuff. Like, so you were telling me that, because you took a biology class, and they were saying that when the sperm and the egg come together, it's like they sit down and, like, do, like, create a sim. Yeah. And figure out everything that this offspring is going to be before it's even encode it.
Well, basically, no, the sperm cell and the egg cell have all the genetic components that are going to be in this child.
Yeah.
And then when they combine, then of course, then you have the child. But there are no two sperm that have the same coating. And there are no two eggs that have the same coating. Each one has already been predetermined with a different DNA code.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they decide which section goes in.
Yeah, as soon as they match, then everything that matches and everything, you know, you start running into the blonde hair, blue eyes, you know, all that stuff. But
so essentially what they're deciding is what in this is going to be in motion and what is going to be at rest.
Yeah.
What is going to be on and what is going to be off.
Yes.
That's why
And
that's why when they do DNA manipulation to create like a perfect child, they do this in China especially, they can turn on and off like gender, like to flip it one way or another, or they can turn on or off other features, and they're trying to work on like turning on and off like genetic factors in like familial cancer and things like that. I'm kind of getting way far away from what all this is saying, but I think that points out that information can be stored, like vast amounts of information can be stored in the tiniest bits.
Yeah.
Which
it makes sense to me now how you like the way you described it.
Yeah. Because we understand that.
The bowl of ice being broken and.
Yeah. Because at that time, they couldn't just say, hey, look at these computers. We can store, you know, 75,000 songs on this thing that fits in your pocket. Because in 1983, they were working with computers that took up an entire room, you know. So it was hard for them to explain how you could fit billions of pieces of information in microscopic spaces. But now it's pretty easy to say, just, hey, look at your cell phone.
In the 83, they didn't really even have the DNA to explain it that way either.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't it crazy how far we've come in just 2 decades?
But not how far we've come, but just...
3 decades?
How far we've come.
4 decades?
But how much of that is just general knowledge as well?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I never went to college, and I know this stuff.
They say you were born in 83.
Yeah, I was born in 83.
I was trying to make myself younger by saying 2 decades. That would be 4 decades.
Yeah, 2 decades is when this was released to the public. And I never heard of it when it was released. I didn't even hear about this thing until just a few years ago. But I know that they use these methods for like Project Stargate. And they use these in other operations as well. We won't get into the Stargate stuff, but we will later. It's pretty fun stuff. All right. Section 14, quote, the consciousness matrix. The universe is composed of interacting energy fields, some at rest and some in motion. It is, in and of itself, one gigantic hologram of unbelievable complexity. According to the theories of Carl Pabram, a neuroscientist at Stanford University, and David Bohm, a physicist at the University of London, the human mind is also a hologram, which attunes itself to the universal hologram by the medium of energy exchange, thereby deducing meaning and achieving the state which we call consciousness. With respect to states of expanded or altered consciousness, such as gateway uses, the process operates in the following way. As energy passes through various aspects of the universal hologram, and it is perceived by the electrostatic fields which comprise the human mind, the holographic images being conveyed are projected upon those electrostatic fields of the mind, and are perceived or understood to the extent that the electrostatic field is operating at a frequency and amplitude that can harmonize with, and therefore, read the energy carrier wave pattern passing through it. Changes in the frequency and amplitude of the electrostatic field, which comprises the human mind, determines the configuration and hence the character of the holographic energy matrix, which the mind projects to intercept meaning directly from the holographic transmissions of the universe. Then to make sense of what the holographic image transmissions of the universe... Then to make sense of what the holographic image is saying to it, the mind proceeds to compare the image just received with itself. Specifically, it does this by comparing the image received with that part of its own hologram which constitutes memory. By registering differences in geometric form and in energy frequency, the consciousness perceives, you can see Exhibit 2 on the next page, and as psychologist Keith Floyd puts it,
contrary to what everyone knows is so, it may not be the brain that produces consciousness, but rather consciousness that creates the appearance of the brain.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, so that one's a little deeper. And pretty much that is just saying, as energy comes down from the universe, our mind tries to describe it in a way that of how we interact with our own world. And much of the way that we interact and describe our own world is through our five senses. We describe how things feel, how things taste, how things look, what color they are, right? Very rarely do we describe them in kind of the way it's talking here, unless we're into occultism. Like, we might say, and you also hear this from people, oh, I got the goosebumps, or, oh, the hair is standing up on the back of my neck.
It gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, but it's kind of unexplainable. And this is also what it's talking about, how there's going to be like a holistic kind of intuition that just falls upon you. And really, you're not going to know how to describe it because you can't describe it through those five senses. You got to figure out another way to convey that. And sometimes it takes people decades to put it into language.
Eebie-jeebies is always a good way to explain that, though.
I got the eebie-jeebies.
Eebie-jeebies.
And typically it's thought that your, I hate saying lower mind, but the subconscious part of your mind understands these symbols. It's like when you have like a crazy dream and you can't even put it into words, but you know what you saw.
Yeah.
Or if you've had a paranormal experience, you know what you saw, but you can't really explain it.
You can't, you don't know how to explain it to somebody who hasn't seen it because it's not anything that you've ever seen before. You know, yeah. It's kind of like when we talked about UFOs and how, you know, the original UFOs were designed were described as ships, like actual boats in the sky. Well, it's because that's what they knew.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so as we see new thing now, it's the cigar shaped object or the, you know, whatnot. But, you know, things are based off of what we can feel, see, or hear, or taste. So we see something, we can describe it as something we've seen before. But if it's something you've never seen before and you have nothing to compare it to, then that's where you get the those things that it's like, I couldn't even tell you what it looked like. Yeah, I saw it, but I can't even begin to describe it.
It's kind of almost like, because they bring up these holograms again. So let's just bring it down to another level, where if we were in a 2D world, how would we describe seeing a part of that 3D triangle, right? So whenever we see something that's from a dimension higher, like the fourth dimension, not time, but a fourth dimension where you have height, width, depth, and another element, you're only seeing a fraction of it because that's all you can perceive. You can't take in the whole.
Yeah.
So you're just stuck with a piece of it.
Kind of like the elephant in the cave, right?
Yeah. Yeah, where a bunch of blind people are around an elephant.
I think I'd combined two different
things. You did, but they're both kind of the same. Because it's both the
I want to put Plato's, an elephant in a cave.
Yeah, Plato's cave goes into this, but I like the elephant more for this one, where one person's on one side of it like, oh, it has a big long trunk. It's like, no, it doesn't. It has big old fat feet. It's like, it has this long, droopy, hairy tail. And they're all seeing a piece, but none of them are taking in the whole.
Yeah.
There's a lot of this with duality within our minds. Like, it's an election year, and I hate bringing up politics, but there's two major parties in the U.S., Democrats and Republicans. And most people fail to see, because they only see one or the other, they don't take in the whole and see that all they are authoritarians.
Yeah.
But to bring it to a simpler term, people describe temperature as hot and cold. But it's still just temperature. It's a whole system. You're just describing two different sides of it. Light and dark is the same thing. It's the inability to take in the whole at a single glance.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to concepts like morality, good and evil, things like that. What are you laughing about?
I'm still thinking about elephant in the cave.
Elephant in the cave.
Sorry.
That's okay. Section 15, quote, brain in phase. The consciousness process is most easily envisaged if we picture the holographic input with a three-dimensional grid system superimposed over it, such that all of the energy patterns contained within can be described in terms of three-dimensional geometry using mathematics to reduce the data to two-dimensional form. Bentov states that scientists suspect that the human mind operates on a simple binary, go, no-go system, as do all digital computers. Therefore, once it superimposes a three-dimensional matrix over holographic information, it wishes to interpret and reduces that information mathematically to two-dimensional form. It can completely process it using its fundamental binary system, just as any computer made by the hand of man can produce volumes of data and make various comparisons between the data and the information stored in its digital memory. Our minds operate in the same way, receiving by comparison only. Bentov states the proposition this way.
Our whole reality is constructed by constantly making such comparisons. Whenever we perceive something, we always perceive differences only.
Its states of expanded consciousness, the right hemisphere of the human brain and its holistic nonlinear and nonverbal mode of functioning, acts as the primary matrix or receptor for this holographic input, while, by operating in phase or coherence with the right brain, the left hemisphere provides the secondary matrix through its binary. Computer-like method of functioning to screen further the data by comparison and reduce it to a discrete two-dimensional form, unquote. Like, this is saying, at least to me, that it's a lot easier to see right and wrong and ignore the whole gray in between.
Yeah.
Yes and no, and ignore the maybe, meh, we'll see, meh. which I think, even as a society in my lifetime, I've seen us getting further away from this model, this duality.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because I'm getting away from it and I'm also perceiving it in others, or if it's always been, or it's, if it's always been, or if it's something new.
Yeah, I don't know, because I made the, you know, conscious effort a few years ago to separate myself from groups.
Yeah.
Because I was sick of the group mindset and not being able to think on my own. Well, in doing so, I got rid of that, a lot of the right, wrong, definite, indefinite, you know, like,
yeah,
where there's, yeah, there's a whole new space of gray that I see in things that I didn't see before because I was in group mindsets.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's exactly what this kind of training or these kind of methods, like, I mean, any of them that they were mentioning, working through like a mystery school's texts and things, it teaches you individualism and how you're just kind of a part you're one part in a whole interconnected system.
Yeah.
Masonry has a lot to do with individualism. Well, again, being inside of an interconnected system, whereas a lot of thinking, a lot of Western thinking especially, is it only focuses on the interconnected system. This is like nationalism and things like that is that way as well. When I was in the Army, there was a focus on this. The Army slogan used to be all you can be or whatever. And then they changed it to an army of one. And they were pushing this doctrine that individually we are strong, right? And individually we need to ensure that we can fill that role for the greater purpose. It very much kind of dealt with that. And this was around in, 2000 or so. Before September 11th. And it is easier with some things to look at it by comparison first. And I don't know why that is. I think it's something maybe we naturally do. I mean, that's, of course, what it's sounding like, unless you've undergone some kind of, I guess, therapy or something like that. All right. Section 16, quote, evaluation. To the extent that Gateway succeeds in bringing about a refinement in energy matrix of the mind, it succeeds in expanding or altering human consciousness so that it can perceive without recourse to the intercession of the physical senses, such that evermore of the universal hologram, not of course accessible by sense perception, can ultimately be perceived and understood. Marilyn Ferguson has written that the theories of Pybrim and Bohm
appear to account for the transcendental experience, paranormal events, and even normal perceptual oddities.
She goes on to say of Pybrim,
currently he is proposing a startling, all-encompassing model that is generating considerable excitement among those intrigued by the mystery of human consciousness. His holographic model marries brain research to theoretical physics. It accounts for normal perception and simultaneously takes the paranormal and transcendental experiences out of the supernatural by explaining them as part of nature. Like certain strange discoveries in the quantum physics, the radical reorientation of the theory suddenly makes sense of paradoxical sayings of mystics throughout the ages.
Unquote.
I'm so proud that I knew what some of those words were.
Well, first thing I want to talk about out of this is Pabram's theories. And particularly taking the paranormal out of the supernatural and explaining it as a part of nature. Because that's very much what our podcast tries to do.
Yeah.
It's like these are very natural things people have experienced. We just don't have scientific terms to describe them.
Yeah. Because they're not things that we can, we know enough about to reproduce. I think that if we knew more about what some of this stuff is, then we would be able to reproduce a lot more of it.
Sure.
But we don't have any concept of it because it's so abnormal.
I'd love to dig more into him and his theories at some time. Because I think that's all they really say about it in this. As far as Pabram and Bohm, I think, I don't know if they bring up any more of their writing or anything. Section 17, quote, self-cognition. To complete our outline of the process by which the mind achieves and exercises consciousness, we must also describe the mechanism which accounts for the aspect of human thought that differentiates it from the consciousness of plants or animals, self-cognition. Humans not only know, but they know that they know. They are also able to monitor the process of their own thinking and maintain an awareness of it. Moreover, they can conduct a comparative assessment, evaluating the functioning of their thought processes against various objective standards they have adopted. Human consciousness can do this because it has the capacity to duplicate aspects of its own hologram, project them out, perceive that projection, put it through comparison with the memory aspect, where its evaluation standards of measure are stored, of its own hologram, and measure or sense the difference using three-dimensional geometry, and then binary go-no-go pulse to yield verbal cognition about the self. Unquote.
I like that we know that we know. Therefore, we know that we know more.
We know that we know that we know.
Was it Plato? I know, therefore I am. Something like that.
Plato is that stuff that tastes like salt, right?
No, I'm talking about the...
I'm just teasing.
Oh. It was either him or it was one of the Neoplatonics. Like Placidus or something.
I know, therefore I am.
Yeah, I know, therefore I am.
I say it all the time. But
yeah. It's probably why it's in my head. And we are good about that. We are very good about evaluating ourselves. I mean, hell, there's a whole scientific field for it.
Rene Descartes. Rene Descartes.
Ah, okay.
Descartes.
Yeah, Descartes.
The car chase. What?
The car chase. That's right. When I typed it in, the first thing it said was Neil Diamond. And I'm like, I don't think Neil Diamond is who I've been quoting for all these years, but it could be. Mom was a huge Neil Diamond fan, so.
Well, he might have said it, too. I mean, it's a very famous thing.
Yeah.
I think it's in one of his songs.
It probably is. But I was like, wait, that's not right. But yes.
It always makes me wonder if plants or animals have imagination. Or if that's something that's inherently just human.
Yeah, I don't know. I think about our animals that we have.
They definitely have memory.
They have memories. They have bonding and like attachments.
Sure.
They've got...
I mean, they have nightmares and stuff, so yeah. I would think...
Yeah. I would think
have some kind of imagination.
Like with the cats, what else but to sit and imagine, like imagine how to take over the world? What else do they do when they're sitting there all day long just staring at me? I feel like there's some kind of thought processes going on there, but more than just food and hunt. You know,
maybe cats do have a bit of an imagination, but they don't realize they have one because they will like just suddenly look up at nothing and get scared of it. Or, like, swat at something that isn't there. Like, people have speculated that maybe they're seeing into another dimension or something. But maybe it's that they're seeing their own imagination and are startled by it. I mean, how many times have you went around the corner and thought you saw something? You just imagined something there and was like, ah!
I don't know. Well, in just the time that I have been sitting here, I have seen something walking. And this, like, I've seen something in the kitchen over here. And I've seen something over there by the couch.
Yeah.
And just out of, like, peripherals as I'm sitting here, but yeah.
Now, I don't doubt they have active imagination, like, because, like, a sleep state, we know they dream.
Yeah.
So, like, a sleep state where, like, you're in a hypnagogic state and your brain just feed, like, your, I guess, your subconscious, something that, it's not your conscious that's feeding you these images that are usually wacky and bonkers and out there. I mean, that would be active imagination, as Carl Jung would define it. So I know they have active imagination, but as far as, it wouldn't be inactive imagination. It would be like visualization, maybe.
Yeah.
There's even some humans that don't have visualization, though. What is that called again?
I don't know.
Aphantasias?
Yeah, aphantasia.
Aphantasia. They lack the ability to visualize.
I don't know, like I said, look, I'm just thinking of our animals, and I just think of, like, our cats in particular. There are times I look at our cats, and I know that they are plotting and planning, and you can't plot and plant without visualization. Not to the extent that our cats plot and plan.
Yeah. I know, I talk pretty openly with somebody who has aphantasia. And they're gracious to answer all my questions about it. And they have told me before that they rely a lot on memory.
Yeah.
So, like, because they're an occultist as well. So, like, if they're wanting to, they told me once, like, if they're wanting to visualize an apple, what they actually have to do is go back to the memory of, like, holding an apple or eating an apple instead of visualizing an apple they've never seen or encountered or experienced.
Okay, so they have to pull up memories instead of creating something. Okay, yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, in a way, we are doing that anyway, because you wouldn't be able to create an apple had you never have seen one.
Yeah, so but could you create a gooseberry?
I don't know, I just have a strawberry with a goose head.
You just did it.
But I wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know what I was seeing.
But I wouldn't have known that that was a gooseberry if I didn't know what a goose or a strawberry looked like. You know what I mean? Like,
oh sure. You know? Yeah.
I don't appreciate us sharing the same brain.
That is exactly what I was picturing.
Yeah, even miles apart, we shared the brain.
Yeah, you're still part of that. What do they call it here? The electrostatic field projecting holograms and duplicating access of your own holograms, projecting them out and simultaneously perceiving that projection. You see, that's what y'all just did. Y'all just did section 17, and I don't think either of you listened to any of these tapes.
I say, we've been doing that since as long as I can remember, but static is quite true sometimes too. I don't know about you, Chad, but sometimes you just stare off and you just hear the
Uh-huh. Oh, sometimes in the middle of a conversation, I just forget the words and everything I'm saying and just sit there and go,
somebody needs to go move the antenna again.
Yeah.
Oh, what popped in my head was, shit, I can't think of what it's called now. It's where you doubt who you are. Where you're evaluating yourself and you had doubt who you are as, like, a man or a woman or, like, a fireman or, like, a postal employee or What the hell is it called? It's the opposite of like egomania.
I know exactly what you're talking about, but it's just gone. I do it all the time. Especially
imposter
with my,
syndrome.
Yes, especially with my mediumship.
I can, yeah, I can guarantee you that cats do not have imposter syndrome.
Oh, no.
Every cat believes it is the best cat of its species that has ever existed. You can just tell.
Every cat believes that it is, in fact, gods. A god.
But I think dogs might have imposter syndrome at times. They're like, am I being my best dog?
No, our dogs are more... Are we human? Or are we something else? Because I'm pretty sure they think they're humans.
One of them, anytime I'm feeding the dogs, I'll turn around and it'll be standing on its hind legs as if to go, no, I'm a people. I need people food.
People feed me, please.
Well, we got halfway through.
Yeah. I think this is a good stopping point, and then we can come back. We can let people marinate on what we've talked about thus far, and then we'll come back next week with...
And you can come into, like, our Discords, or if you, like, hell, if you're on any servers I'm on and you want to whisper me. Discord changed up everything where you don't have to know the numbers. And I'm just Dave Ardrey on there.
Yeah.
If you want to message me and talk about this, or maybe if you're not understanding a certain part of it, maybe I can break it down in a different way.
I'm super awesome, Amy.
I'm Get Finchy.
On our UMP Normalcy. In fact, that's actually where we're recording this right now, because the website we used to use to record distantly is now wanting to charge us, and well, we aren't ready to pay for that yet. We don't use distance recording enough to justify that. But yes, thank you, Dave, for introducing us to all this intriguing information.
And as a teaser for the next episode, I'm going to read the first sentence from section 18. Quote, time, space, dimension. Up to this point, our discussion of the gateway process has been relatively simple and easy to follow. Now the fun begins. Unquote.
All right. So, if you want to read ahead, of course, you can download this. If you haven't been listening or downloading and following along, you can get that link in our description. Also, be sure to like us, follow us, and all that fun stuff on Facebook, Instagram, and Discord. And if you want to, you can buy us a coffee through Buy Me a Coffee. Link for that is also in the description of this show. I think that is going to do it for tonight. So until next time.
Keep digging.
Phenomena.
Unearthed Paranormalcy is part of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network. To hear more great independent productions like the one you just listened to, visit our catalog.